On November 13th, 2015, I was sitting at home when a friend texted me, "Turn on your TV now." My stomach tightened and I felt a sense of dread. I grabbed the remote and turned on CNN. Terrorists had struck Paris, France, in a series of coordinated attacks. A sports stadium, a music venue, cafes, restaurants, all had been hit by either suicide bombers or gunmen wielding assault rifles. The situation was fluid, but it appeared that hundreds of people were killed or wounded. I watched, slack-jawed. My mind flashed to a visit I'd made to Paris 8 years earlier as a U.S. government employee. I met with groups of Muslims in cafes very much like the ones that were attacked, sipping coffee and talking about their lives. My table mates were typically French, their dress and ideas indistinguishable from that of their fellow countrymen. None of them thought much about Al-Qaeda. To them, terrorism seemed a faraway threat that didn't affect their lives. However, they had noticed more violent, extremist views circulating in their communities. The notion that attacks on Muslims and non-Muslims were justified, or that killing secular Muslims was the only way to teach them. And this had concerned them. As the news continued to come in, it became clear that the so-called Islamic State had organized and inspired the Paris attackers. By hitting and severely paralyzing the city, the so-called Islamic State would show both opponents and potential recruits that it could wreak destruction far beyond its nominal caliphate in Syria and Iraq. With fundamental French values in mind, the attackers had targeted cultural installations, seeking to inflict the maximum amount of emotional distress. And the attack had been an inside job, executed primarily by French-born Muslims who had been radicalized. 6 of the attackers were French, 2 Belgian, and 2 of unknown nationality. The message to the French and other nations opposing the so-called Islamic State was terrifying. We've got small cells of sympathizers hidden inside your countries. No matter how strong you are, we can mobilize them at will to cause major damage. Nobody is safe. As Paris Mayor Anne Hidalgo said, lamenting the violence visited on her city in 2015, "This was an attack against the foundations of our democracies." As distressed as I was to watch images of dazed and bloodied citizens fleeing mayhem in a European capital, I was also profoundly frustrated. Since the 2006 Danish cartoon crisis, members of the policy establishment had been concerned that an attack like this, coming from within Europe, aimed at soft targets, was possible. We had known that the extremists were attracting youth by crafting an appealing ideology. But rather than directing significant resources toward countering this ideology, we had downplayed it as a threat. Footnote: France has especially downplayed this, even though it has the largest Muslim population in Europe and boasts one of the best traditional law enforcement capabilities. In 2007, a senior French law enforcement official told me that his organization knew that foreign ideologies were influencing some French citizens and were monitoring them carefully. End of footnote. Radicalization had taken place unimpeded, to the point where it now menaced many countries. The attacks on Paris were, paradoxically, a predictable surprise and entirely preventable. Today, 2 groups, Al-Qaeda and the so-called Islamic State, stand as the dominant sources of global terrorism. Al-Qaeda emerged during the 1980s, fighting the Soviets in Afghanistan. Osama bin Laden sought to exploit anti-Soviet jihadi momentum in the region to globalize Al-Qaeda's cause, providing disparate terror movements elite training facilities, weaponry, and other logistical support. By the 1990s, he and his compatriots had refocused their hatred from local antagonists to one common enemy, the United States. The so-called Islamic State, by contrast, took shape in the unrest that followed America's intervention in Iraq in 2003.